Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to tonight's episode of the Red Light Sports Bramble, presented to you by the Grilling Truth Radio Sports Network. You can check out the Grilling Truth at thegrillingtruth.net, and you can follow on Twitter as well at the Grilling Truth. So you can also follow me on Twitter at Evan with Sports as well. So, lots to talk about. I didn't do a show last night. For those, I apologize. Something for me came up, and Troy was unable to do a show. And I am flying solo tonight as well. And, you know, we had over the weekend, we had the Final Four on Saturday. We had WrestleMania on Sunday. We had the Women's National Championship game on Sunday, which did not involve the UConn Husky women's team. And Monday, we had the national championship game. And today, we had Tony Romo retiring. Not officially retiring, I guess, but saying he's done playing football. And he took a media job with CBS. And he is now the number one. He's with the number one team for Sunday football with CBS. He joins, he's replacing Phil Simms. So we're going to be, I'm going to be talking about some Tony Romo. Going to be talking about some NCAA National Championship game. And if there's time, talking about some stuff that happened at WrestleMania as well. So first off, with Tony Romo. So Tony Romo, preseason last year, gets hurt. Hurts his back on a slide in a preseason game where he got hit while he was sliding, and he ends up fracturing or injuring a bone in his back or breaking a bone in his back, one of the two, and he ends up missing the majority of the year. Comes in, and he then leads the Cowboys to a two-loss season. A 2-3 loss season. And the rest, they say, is history. Now, Cowboys don't really need Tony Romo anymore. Romo played one snap last year in the regular one game last year in the regular season loss, where he played one series that led to a touchdown, the only touchdown, one and only Cowboy touchdown in that game. And all off season long, it's been, what do we do with Tony Romo? Do they trade him? Do they cut him? It looked like they were going to cut him at one point early in the off season, but then Jerry Jones got to thinking, I have these teams in the NFL that want a quarterback. I'm going to trade him. And he was asking for quite a bit for trading him. And teams weren't budging, and Jones couldn't find a deal that worked for him. And then next thing you know, now today, Romo's hanging it up. He is retiring, or not really retiring, but giving up playing football. Well, whatever, Tony Romo is now going to be working for CBS, being lead chair for the number one or A broadcast team, whatever you want to call it, for CBS, replacing Phil Simms. So I got a question that I want to discuss. Is it a slap to the face to broadcasters everywhere that Tony Romo, with no prior experience being a broadcaster, we don't even know if Romo's going to be any good doing color commentary. Is it a slap to the face, journalists, the broadcasters, to the people that work their butts off each and every day doing internships, going to school, doing the grunt work, doing the tough work, getting the coffee, staying late, getting there early. And Tony Romo, who's never done any broadcast work, slides right on in and gets the gig. Is that a slap in the face? To be honest, I'm going to say kind of yes. I got to say yes. It's a bit of a slap in the face, because who's to say that Romo's any good. And Romo's an intelligent guy. Romo's very intelligent. He knows his, you know, stuff pretty well. He's very composed, very well spoken. So, excuse me. He is a little tired tonight, so I do apologize for the yawning. Been a long few days. So, but he, you know, he's very well spoken. But who's to say if he's going to be any good replacing Phil Sims? And I know Phil Sims is not very good this year. Phil Sims was awful, and Phil Sims hasn't really been good in a while. So I guess it's easy to say it's you know, it can't get any worse. But, you know, I wonder what kind of work Romo's going to put in order to do the job really well. And again, I do say it is a bit of a slap in the face. But, you know, you got to understand, too, though, that CBS wants, they want the name. They want the name Tony Romo being their number one analyst, number one color commentator. They don't want, you know, some guy that does, you know, that doesn't have that pedigree that Romo has or Phil Sims or those guys have doing. They want that pedigree. So the next question now is, where is Tony Romo ranked when it comes to quarterbacking? What is, you know, where does he stand? You know, he had a long career, 37 years old, very long career. And what is Tony Romo remembered for? And, you know, he's going to very unfairly to me be remembered for his not being able to rise to the occasion when it counted the most in the playoffs. He's going to be remembered for the injuries, and he's going to be remembered for his celebrity dating before he finally settled down with his current wife. But in between all that, he was a very good quarterback. Hall of Fame-worthy quarterback? No. Will he get in the Hall of Fame someday? Well, if there's ever a weak class that they need some star power to, or the draft selection committee wants to get a big name on there, you know, down the road on maybe his fourth or fifth or sixth ballot, maybe. But Tony Romo was a pretty good quarterback. He was a good team leader, really good athlete out of Burlington, Wisconsin, undrafted out of Eastern Illinois, signed with the Cowboys to very small little contract, and he ended up replacing Drew Bledsoe and ended up being a very, very good quarterback in Dallas. The problem was he just couldn't stay healthy. Injuries mounted, injuries built up, and he just couldn't stay healthy. He could not stay healthy, and then you had the issue of him not being able to win when it counted in the playoffs. Then that's what happened with Tony Romo. He couldn't win in the playoffs. He could not win when it counted most. But, you know, as Jerry Jones talks about him, he's a wonderful representative of the Cowboy organization. But you got to think, too, look at some of the talent that Romo had around him overall, too. He didn't have the talent that Roger Staubach or the talent that Troy Aikman had. It wasn't until late in Tony Romo's career that the Cowboys really started drafting really well and building from the front, at the front, the offensive line. It wasn't until late in Tony Romo's career that they started focusing on that, protecting the quarterback, running the ball, protecting the football, playing the offense that they probably should have been playing with Tony Romo all along. They didn't have the personnel. So I would have been interested to see, and I think Dak Prescott going with him is the right decision, but I would have been interesting to see what would have happened if Tony Romo could have been the starter for the Cowboys for 16 weeks last year, with Ezekiel Elliott busting onto the scenes, with a healthy Dez Bryant, with a defense that was relatively serviceable, very, very underrated. A lot of people talking crap about their defense, but at the same time, you know, the defense played better than most people give them credit for. So it'd be interesting to see what Tony Romo would have been able to do to this Cowboy team. Now, would he have done better than Dak Prescott? We don't know. Dak Prescott took the job and ran with it, and he did what every guy, you know, person should do. You know, he took advantage of the opportunity that he gets. But I guess I would have been very interested to see what Tony Romo would have done. I think he's very underrated quarterback, not Hall of Fame worthy, but very underrated. I think it was, you know, the popular thing was to rag on him and joke about him and poke fun at him. I think that was the popular thing to do, but at the end of the day, he was a good quarterback and very, very, you know, from everyone that I've read or spoke to, I know people that, you know, have interviewed him, they have nothing but the nicest thing to say about Tony Romo. So I hope he does well at his new gig in CBS. I hope he does really well. You know, I wish Tony Romo the best of luck with CBS, and I hope he I hope he does great, and we'll see. We'll see what he does from here. And Hall of Famer, like I said, no, but Tony Romo definitely gets more grief than he probably deserves. So, moving on, North Carolina, they crowned the national champion of 2007. North Carolina's sixth national championship win, and Roy Williams gets another title. You know, good for Roy. However, overall, it was not a good game, and the referees. And I'm not blaming the referees for the outcome, but the referees, contributed to the poor game. I think they contributed to it. You know, but you look at the game, you know, congrats to North Carolina, but, you know, Carolina shot 35% from the field, Gonzaga 33. Gonzaga shot 42% from three-point line on just 19 attempts, North Carolina 14%. From the free throw line, Gonzaga 65%, North Carolina 57%. Turnovers, 14 for Gonzaga, only 4 for North Carolina. 22 personal fouls apiece on both teams. Very sloppy game. Very sloppy game overall. And it was quite hard to watch. I didn't watch the whole game, because of work and whatnot, but it was a very tough game to watch. And what didn't help the game was the officials. The article on FoxSports.com written by Chris Chase, and he has an article that says the refs ruined the NCAA championship game, and he's not exactly wrong. He's really not. So North Carolina made their mistakes. Gonzaga made a lot of mistakes. But it was tough to watch. There were bad calls after bad calls in the second half. There were 4 fouls called in the first 78 seconds of the second half, 9 fouls by the first team beat timeout in the second half, 16 by the second, and 22 by the third. Over the final 8 minutes, they did settle down, blowing only 5 whistles, but you know, all the fouls they called by the second TV timeout and even by the third media timeout, there's a lot of fouls. That slowed the game down. The teams weren't able to get any rhythm, and it got stopped. And then they called the center for Gonzaga a flagrant foul. When it wasn't dirty, it was accidental contact to the neck. He didn't target the neck. He didn't go after. I mean, just going for the ball and made contact with the neck, and now we're going to give him a flagrant one call. To me, that was ridiculous. That was a horrible call. You know, I kind of give the refs the benefit of the doubt on the jump ball late in the game where the Carolina player's hand touched the out-of-bounds line, because his hand wasn't on the out-of-bounds line for very long. But the delays are bad. Delays, they have the review for the flagrant fouls, figure out who touched the ball last going out of bounds and stuff like that. And as bad as the referees were in the game, the NCAA doesn't really have anyone to blame but themselves for this. Because what, and the NFL does this too. The NCAA does this as well. We get to the tournament, especially the Final Four of the National Championship. We break up officiating teams. We break them up. We get, you know, the refs that, you know, were graded at the top all year, they get, you know, they get paired together and it goes down from there. So you're putting officials who have never worked with each other prior to the NCAA tournament, putting them with one another. Officials get comfortable working with one another when they work with each other all year. They get comfortable with each other. So now you split them up and you're expecting them to be, you're expecting them to work together really, really well. It doesn't work that way. The chemistry and the teamwork and stuff like that, it doesn't happen overnight, and you're expecting them to pretty much. So I think that's a big mistake the NCAA needs to fix. Like I said, the NFL does it too, and I think the NCAA needs to fix that. They need to stop making these super team of refs in the NCAA tournament and let teams work together. Top rated team works, you know, whatever. It's this particular. And Dan Dockich, who a lot of the time I don't agree with at all. I don't agree with Dan Dockett really ever, but he was commenting on Mike and Mike this morning. I was listening to him on the way to the gym today, and he was saying that when he was coaching Bowling Green, that the head of the officials for the conference would go into the locker room for the officials and tell them they need to stop blowing more whistles at halftime. And I've noticed that the second half of games and college basketball are very hard to watch. Very hard to watch. And it's like they change how they're calling it. The first half, they let plays go. So they kind of let the guys play. Second half rolls around. What do? Get very ticky-tacky. Calling fouls left and right and being a lot more, you know, they don't let them play anymore. But to me, that's ridiculous. I would say the second half is when they should just kind of let them play a little bit, establish how they're going to call the game early in the game, and let it go from there. We saw what happened and with Wisconsin and Duke in the championship game. The first half, the referees called the game one way. Wisconsin took advantage of it. They come out in the second half, and they start calling a lot of ticky-tacky fouls. Wisconsin's not able to be as aggressive as they were in the first half because things are letting go in the first half, letting go in the second half. And it just completely changed the game. And no, I'm not blaming the refs for Duke lost, but the referees did have an impact on the loss because they started changing the way they're calling the game. And like I said, the NCAA has no one to blame but themselves. They did it to themselves by doing all this, moving guys around in regards to the NCAA tournament with how bad the refs were. But they need to allow the guys just to play. If they're not killing each other on the court, I think that's okay. I think they should let them do the job. Let them play some tough and some aggressiveness. But Denzel Boy currently does not want that. So, final topic of the night. We don't talk a lot of wrestling on the show. I did a little bit last Thursday, and I am tonight. But, you know, WrestleMania just finished on Sunday. And I just want to comment on this. We saw the end of an era in professional wrestling when The Undertaker, Mark Calaway, pretty much signified to the crowd, signaled to the crowd, showed the crowd that he is retiring. He's been a figure in the WWE, WWF, whatever you want to call it, since 1990, showed up at Survivor Series of that year, and he's been wrestling ever since. And, you know, 53 years old, obviously all careers come to an end, but he took off his, put in the ring, took off his gloves, put him on top of the jacket, then took his hat, set it on top, broke character when he proceeded to kiss his, you know, kiss his wife before he started walking up the ramp. And on Twitter, I saw a lot of people complaining on The Undertaker had to lose his last match. You know, how dare they do that? They should have done him better than that. He deserved better than that. But here's the thing with The Undertaker, Mark Calaway. He's as old school as it comes. What he did was old school. When guys, the old guys, were calling it a career, that is how they would go out. They would go out laying on their back, looking up at the lights, while putting over the young talent, which he did with Roman Reigns, putting over the young talent, and then usually leave a piece of their equipment or costume or whatever you want to call it in the ring before they leave. And the Undertaker's at old school as they come. I'm sure if they would have said, hey, you're going to win this match, you're going to end your career on top, he would have wanted nothing to do with it. He would probably, you know, said hell no and walked out. In the old school wrestling, that's what guys did. And as I said, the Undertaker's at old school as they come. And with him, that's the end of an era. It's officially the new guy's show. You know, Goldberg's now done after his WrestleMania loss. Undertaker's retired. Austin doesn't come around anymore. The Rock's coming around less and less and less. And, you know, Chris Jericho is pretty much the only old-timer left. And then Brock Lesnar, who took some time off and now he's back. Now you got, you know, guys like Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, those guys, and it's now their time to carry the show. And you still got some veterans sprinkled in there like AJ Styles, who's been all over the world doing his trade. But there's never going to be another Undertaker to go that long as he did, entertaining the crowd, making his character survive as the wrestling, wrestling changed from cartoon characters to people, you know, to people that have day jobs like race car drivers was popular, to more bold characters and your face characters. He survived. He survived it all by reinventing himself over and over again, and he made it that he was relevant for so long. And he was so loved for so long. So, you know, for The Undertaker, thank you so much for entertaining many years of my childhood. You know, I enjoyed watching him perform in the ring, his character, his persona, and, you know, he'll be missed. So, you know, with that, I do want to thank you all for listening. Hopefully, Troy will be back tomorrow, and we'll talk some sports again tomorrow. And with that, I hope you all have a great rest of your night. And we'll be back tomorrow at 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 9948. That's 646-564-9948. Give us a call. We'll love to talk to you live. If you're going to listen to us live, follow me on Twitter at Evan Witt Sports. Troy is at Troy Roberts. Give me 1 second. Troy Robert, 967. You have at Red Light Sports and at The Grueling Truth. And you can check out all the stuff put up by The Grueling Truth by going to thegruelingtruth.net. I'll get back at you all tomorrow. Have a good night.